And I think Joe Johnson also loves jazz. Joe, can you tell me how much you love jazz music?
I don't think I love it as much as you, Paul.
Well,
but I do enjoy me some jazz on occasion.
Well, then we might have to cut this interview short because this show is for jazz lovers only now. I just declared it. I made the rule, and we have to stick to it. So you have to at least pretend that jazz is the most important thing to you right now for this interview, okay?
Sounds like a plan.
Good. Hey, you're listening to me and you're following my instructions. This is awesome. This doesn't normally happen. We're talking to Joseph Johnson from Johnson Family Properties, and I think he has some other titles as well. But Joe is a good friend who happens to be a housing developer in town and also a medical practitioner. Would you call yourself a medical practitioner? Is that accurate?
There's a simpler term. It's called nurse.
Oh, okay.
A nurse, professor.
Oh yeah, you're a professor too. You get to like use the fake bodies and show people where to like use the Bic pen to give them a tracheotomy.
On occasion.
Man, I didn't actually know that would be true. I thought you would say no, Paul. I don't actually do that. Why don't you know more about my job? But that's fine.
Yeah.
That's fine. I'm learning a lot today. So we're talking to Joe Johnson. He reluctantly agreed to be on this show, was a little worried because he didn't know what we'd talk about, but we always have things to talk about. Joe is, he's got a kind of an interesting story. I'm hoping you'll tell us today, you know, sort of how you came to PT and how you came to be involved in developing affordable housing in Port Townsend, and maybe give us a little bit of your backstory for the listeners who don't know who Joseph Johnson is.
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, I had arrived to Port Townsend in 2003. I was just drawn to the area due to just beauty. I had some distant family in the area. And kind of when I was taking a break from, college and, just fell in love with the area and, had a local friend that said I should become a nurse. And I said, oh, great. That sounds like a great idea. And so I enrolled at Peninsula College and became a nurse and moved on to Seattle and, after graduating, and kind of, that was kind of my first, attempt in real estate was buying a house in, 2008 in Seattle. I wouldn't say my first foray into real estate was an amazing adventure or a great idea. But we bought a house and saw the price plummet shortly
what
after
neighborhood?
Buying it.
What neighborhood?
We were up near Northgate.
That's where I was born and raised.
Oh, hey. Yeah, we were just a few blocks down from the mosque there on Northgate Way.
Right by the QFC.
Yeah, right by the QFC.
And Skippers. Well, Skippers isn't there anymore. It used to be a Skippers, and now it's like Lila Jane's Fish Shack. Or no, now it's Patty's Egg Nest, I think. Part 3, and of course the Great Costume Shop. You know that huge costume emporium. I can't remember what it's called, but it's like a warehouse of costumes and Halloween novelties right by there.
Nope, not. It's not ringing a bell.
Oh, man.
We pretty much, when I was in Seattle, it was my route was from the house there to work over on Till Hill.
Oh, God.
And back.
Yeah.
And that was pretty much my entire adventuring around Northgate was just getting to I-5.
That's, yeah, okay.
But they did have, build that big, new development there south of the mall when we were there.
Yeah.
To make way, so that was nice.
Yeah.
But anyways,
you're talking about the one, the Thornton Place, right?
Yeah, Thornton Creek. Yeah. Thornton Place.
Yeah. Yeah, that used to just be like a weird hillside parking lot. I'm not gonna like force you to have Paul's childhood tour of Northgate. I'll do that offline. Or maybe I will do it online. Who knows?
We had the nicest neighbors I've ever had, though, were at that house. It was this family of three generations from Somalia. Mm. Stayed in the house next door. And you had to be careful if they invited you in for coffee, because it wasn't just coffee. It was like roasting the coffee. It was having the snack before the coffee. And anyways, if you actually got in their house, you were in there for 4 hours.
That's amazing.
At a minimum. And you met everyone of their, I think they had like 12 people living in their house, like two sets of grandparents. They were great.
I've never heard of like on-demand roasting, you know, at a coffee. I mean, just like in a house, most people don't roast their own.
Yeah, they would just roast it in a frying pan.
That is so
cool. And
then
they grind it right there and then make it.
That's like the freshest coffee that you probably ever had. Although you're a very world traveler person, so maybe you've had fresher experiences, but that's pretty cool for Northgate in Seattle.
Yeah, overall it was a great experience. But then we had our first son was born, and both me and Katie, my wife, we both were I was definitely from a small town. She was from a suburb of San Francisco, so I can't claim that she was from a small town. But we definitely wanted to once we had our kid, we were like, you know what, we actually want to be in more of a smaller town feel. And then Katie's parents live on this side of the water, and we're like, oh, we want to start moving back, but I still had a great job in Seattle. So we actually moved to Bainbridge.
Trader.
Shortly thereafter. And obviously couldn't sell our house in Seattle, so we rented it after we left. But, you know, when we moved to Bainbridge, it actually kind of started our real kind of developing, you know, kind of our business model, because when we were there, we were walking around kind of near the downtown Winslow area there, and there kind of about a block or so off of the main drag there was this one neighborhood, and gosh, we were like, me and Katie looked at each other like, wow, this would be the neighborhood we'd want to live in. Mm. If we could. And obviously looked around at housing prices there, and they were like so beyond anything close to what we could afford, right?
Yeah.
I mean, just astronomical. But, you know, shortly thereafter, some land came for sale in that neighborhood. We were like, well, that's interesting. And I wonder what we could do with land. And we actually bought the land, and we pretty much worked with a contractor that was, they kind of worked with us for us to do a lot of the work. But that's really where our the knowledge base started to form, was trying to get a house built in downtown Winslow. And, you know, people complain about building in Port Townsend and the restrictions we have here. Try Bainbridge Island.
Mm. Is it worse?
What's that?
Is it harder?
It's worse. It is way worse. Are you kidding me? But just through that process, because part of the deal I made with the contractor is I would do all the process through permitting and everything.
Had you ever done anything like that before?
No, we hadn't done that before. I hadn't done it before. And so he's kind of learned on the fly. But, you know, the nice thing, you know, is about the building or permitting process, right? It's kind of like a, I don't know, like a recipe book, right? You just kind of got to follow the rules. There's nothing to, it definitely doesn't take a, you know, a neurosurgeon to follow the directions and the codes, right, to kind of figure this stuff out. But they did have one thing that I was very grateful for is they have a Bainbridge has a very their permit counter is very accessible. You pretty much anytime you needed to talk to somebody, somebody was there and they more than willing to give you the answer. And so that's where it really started.
And you enjoyed that process. It sounds like that it was.
I'm sure if you talk to anyone who's built a house who did the majority of kind of the legwork on it, by the end of it, most of them would say, "I feel like I need to do this again," because you learn so much through that process. You just learn so much through that process, and it's. Seems like a waste to have that, you know, knowledge go not be used again. But we this worked really. I'm kind of a control freak, so even though we hired a contractor, we did. You know, I was there on site most of the days, working with them to make a lot of the choices and decisions, and so. Through that process, we were like, once we were done, I was like, gosh, we need to do this again. One thing that Bainbridge did have that at the time that was definitely more lenient than Port Townsend was they have a really great ADU code that made it very easy to build an ADU. So that one we built an ADU on the property. And so that's kind of where it really, actually our rental property stuff came from, you know, having a house in Seattle that wasn't making any money, but, we managed the rental property, as well. And so again, kind of got thrown into the fire of learning, how to be a landlord and, you know, following all the rules around that. So again, kind of getting thrown into all these things, not out of really seeking them out, but almost them finding us.
Yeah.
Did you finally
unburden yourself of the Northgate property?
We did. And, you know, we actually, we use kind of a creative real estate strategy. It's called a lease to own for the person that was there.
Oh, nice.
He had just started a business, and so he was not capable of obtaining a loan at the time. But he really wanted the house, and I really didn't want to keep losing, you know, the difference between the rent and the mortgage every month. And so we were able to just work out an agreement where, you know, we agreed to sell him the house in the future and he agreed to, you know, pay, you know, a monthly rent that covered our costs. And so it actually worked out really well. We weren't burdened by it and he was able to get a house, with some security, knowing once he had his, you know, couple of years of tax returns, he could qualify for a regular mortgage.
That's great.
Shout out to Dom for at New American Funding for making it work. For Dom was actually the lender that actually got it for him.
Are you speaking Dominic Spornich, occasional host of Rumble Beach? Beach Rumble. Yep. That's awesome that Dom was able to help with that because he is such a helpful human being.
Yeah.
So then you landed in Bainbridge. You did a project in Bainbridge that had an ADU. I mean, what caused you to want to leave Bainbridge and the ease of developing in Bainbridge behind for Port Townsend?
We then did a number of projects on Bainbridge because you knew the code at that point. Once you learn the local code, it makes the next time drastically easier. And then I met a number of, of good tradesmen through the projects that we had done. And so we'd actually built a number of other houses on Bainbridge during that time. Also did some work in Kitsap County as well, doing a few projects around there. And again, you just kind of keep learning and learning. And then it was, finally, really it was the, I got sick of the commute. Really, we had just been coming back to Port Townsend again to visit Katie's parents, but then also our good close friends who we stayed friends with, who are here in town. And just after a while, we were like, we're spending almost all of our free time in Port Townsend. Why are we not living in Port Townsend? And I was just able to get I throughout all of our projects and everything, I maintained being a nurse, and I had also picked up some teaching jobs through the community college system, teaching nursing, and so it was a fairly easy move for us to come up here. I was able to get a job at the hospital and then get a teaching gig out of the college in Port Angeles.
And is this a forever home for you now?
Our house now? Oh yeah, no, we love it. We bought our house here in town. We knew it was the right place, and I am tenured out of the college now, so I'd be silly to attempt to find another teaching gig anywhere else.
That's rad.
Our side business is, we've pretty much been strictly in Port Townsend now for the last 4 years doing projects.
Let's talk about some of those after we hear a song. I want to grill you on your projects and talk about being a landlord and talk about being a developer too. That dirty word. But first, Joe requested a Journey song. He requested a Primus song or a Journey song. I told him to choose Journey, so he chose Primus, and I said fine. And then he went back to Journey, which was good because I felt like the Journey song I was thinking of fits better. So, but you had something you wanted to say about bassists, Joe?
Well, I figured it was important that you heard a true bassist and vocalist like the lead singer of Primus,
like Les Claypool,
rather than somebody like, say, from like Rush, who's just kind of like a fake bassist and kind of a singer.
Wow.
I thought it would be appropriate for.
Where's
your
the dump button? I'm gonna. It's labeled dump. Just kidding. I'm not gonna dump you, but I will have you know that Les Claypool worships Geddy Lee and cites him as a major inspiration. So basically, that's why I chose this Journey song, and you should stay tuned, because I'm really gonna give it to Joe after this musical. This is Glendon Biofilter, and I'm Wild Rice. And you're listening to KPTZ 91.9 FM. And we're talking to Joseph Johnson, or Joe Johnson, from Johnson Family Properties, who gave us a bit of his backstory, is how he became a nurse and a kind of low-key on the side developer as well. And I wanted to talk to you before we talk about anything else, you being a landlord and then, being able to sell the house to to your tenant. It's a pretty cool deal. It doesn't happen very often. But, you know, just being a landlord, I mean, is a lot of folks who own properties or second homes, they're kind of scared to be landlords because they're scared of some of the responsibilities that could end up coming with that. And, you know, the understanding that, you know, they may have to deal with, you know, tenants who aren't the best tenants. Do you ever talk to landlords, or do you have any advice that you would give landlords or people who are thinking about being landlords but might be just a little bit scared to get their feet wet?
No, I think the first thing that people need to temper is any expectation on, I should say they need to see what their goals are, right? For starting that business, because it is a business, right? And so you kind of need to see what are your goals of that business, right? When you're property managing or landlording, right, it can be either, you know, for profit, right, for like monthly paycheck, right? And I would say first and foremost, if that is the plan to actually make money on a regular monthly basis, I would say temper that expectation drastically. Because I think that's where a lot of people get maybe burned going into it, thinking that, you know, they kind of run these numbers and they're thinking, oh my gosh, I'm going to make, you know, $800 a month, right? And so when they go in that with that expectation, it can create some hardships. All right, I don't want to say hardships for them, but
hardships is true. It can be a hardship.
Yeah, you don't end up making that level of money, like monthly money, that you would expect, because you want to be a good owner and you want to maintain the property, and you want to have a good relationship with your tenant. And so where I think people run into trouble is when, you know, you start getting these things, these maintenance things, all these issues, and they're like, well, that's taking up all my profit. And you're like, well, that's part of doing business, right? Mm. That's what you have to do. Mm. And so you need to really temper that down drastically, that you think you're going to have this big paycheck every month. Because again, what that's going to do is going to make the landlord probably skimp on things, maybe not be as great on maintenance as they had wanted to, where if they would have went in with a better expectation and understanding of what the costs are to be a landlord. So again, if the goal is to make money every month, you have to really go in with some clear eyes of what actually that's going to look like, you know. And over time, if you look over time, it's about 50% of rent goes to maintenance, right? And maintaining the property. If you were to like look at a property over 10 years, and getting rent 10 years, you can automatically just take away half of that for maintaining the property properly. And so I think that is a pretty big surprise to a lot of people. But then the other thing, though, is just also understanding that, you know, you also have somebody, you know, you're still making value in having somebody pay down your mortgage every month, right?
Yeah.
That's the biggest thing. It's just like, I think understanding that there is going to be cost and not thinking that as being a problem.
Yeah.
Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Like, no, it totally does.
And I think going into that with that understanding, you have a much better idea of what it means to be a good landlord in maintaining the property appropriately for somebody to live there. Again, it's when you start getting those people who are like not wanting to do that maintenance and getting frustrated with a tenant that not being a good business owner in the end. That's where some problems come into play. But then on the on the flip side, though, is it's not like you're doing a, how should I put it? It's not like a real job, right? It's not like a real, job. So you should have some decent expectations on what you're going to make on a monthly basis. And so ensuring that you're providing a good relationship with your tenant is probably the number one thing, and keeping lines of communication open with your tenant are some of the biggest things. So lowering expectations on profit and then being a good keeping that relationship with your tenant there.
Which benefits both of you.
Because then it benefits both of you in the end. And I think that's where, you have a lot of people who are timid to rent something out to people. And again, if you're timid, it's what applications are about, background checks and reference checks are for, right? That's why you should meet, that's why you meet the person and get a feel for them. And then again, just know they're doing a lot for you as a landlord, right? I mean, again, they're paying down your mortgage. So just ensure that you're seeing it as like a back and forth relationship is one of the biggest things.
You hear that, landlords?
Yeah.
Please be landlords.
So that would be my biggest thing. And again, there's definitely some fear and obviously there's horror stories out there, but again, I think everyone you hear the horror stories more. You hear about the horror stories. You don't hear about other 99% where it actually went great.
Right.
And so these people can rent things out. And again, as long as they're keeping communication open, they're respecting the rights of the tenant. The tenant is respecting the property. Again, it's a win-win-win. We have some, properties in Kitsap County, where we've had tenants in there for six plus years, who are great. We know them. We know their stories. We know that they respect the property. And in the end, it's like they stay there. We always because it's a great relationship, we don't raise the rent as much as it would be for, what the market is doing. But again, it's because it's working out for both of us.
Yeah.
I will say again, if people are timid about it, do talk to other landlords and hear that there are actually really great experiences that can happen with landlording.
Can they talk to you?
Sure.
If they can find you. He's hard to find.
If they can find me.
Yeah.
If I'm available.
Well, let's switch gears real quick because we don't have too much time left. I want to talk. I really appreciate the landlord thoughts, but I want to let's test the waters and see if Lance Bailey is listening. Hey, Lance, are you listening? Are you listening, Lance? Hey, Lance, are you there? Lance, wait, hold on. I got it. Lance, wake up. Wake up. You're still on the clock. I want to talk about barriers to development in Port Townsend specifically, things that you could see being easy changes right now for the city to make to help there be more usable housing. And if that is possible, if not, maybe it's not possible because, well, as the reasons that we know, you know, but maybe talk a little bit about that, you know, the barriers that are solvable and the barriers that aren't solvable for creating more housing in Port Townsend.
Well, I think some low hanging fruit, as everyone knows, like the development, you know, meaning like the creation of the roads, the sidewalks, the utilities, right, is just so unbelievably expensive, right? It's just so unbelievably expensive. And as far as development goes, like if somebody's, typically if you run the calculations of how development works, typically it's, a developer actually makes the money through the development of the land. And then with the house that goes on it is actually a very smaller amount of a profit through the development calculation. Right. But here in Port Townsend, one of the problems that we have is that the fact that the city was created in 1880, right? The plat of the city was created in 1880. So we have like a city designed around like horse and buggies. And so it wasn't designed with 21st century development standards in mind. And so we have these, this like massive streets and, you know, just tons of land, but no way to get, or no easy way to get development out to them. And because, again, everything's platted, right? Everything's pre-platted, that typically when somebody buys a piece of property, even a large property, you only can buy one side of the road. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so you can't just develop half the road. you have to develop the full road. And so you have to pay for all the development that goes to the land on the other side. And obviously there's things like latecomers and all that that can help mitigate it. But that's just like a hope that you might get some of that money back.
Right. And for people who don't know, a latecomers means that you would build this development or you would develop the infrastructure at your own cost. And then if anybody else used your infrastructure within 15 years, you would get paid back a portion of what you paid, the big lump sum to create the infrastructure.
Yeah. So when somebody does a big development, right, they got to pay for the whole road, but they only get to use half of it for their land. And when you do that calculation of, you know, land plus development, that development cost of developing that whole road, which would cost the other side of the road, takes out all the profit from that equation. And so then you have to rely on the house to then the building the house to then increase the, you know, a normal profit margin. And again, when you're talking about profit margins in this space, you're talking about like 10%, right? It's a very, very, very low profit margin. Because that's why when you see larger developments, if you go through Squim or you go through Kitsap County, you'll see larger developments, right? They build the street and they build the road and then they build on both sides of the road, right? Because they buy a large chunk of property that they can then, you know, create their plat map to design, so that way when they build the road, they get the most bang for their buck. But here in our town, right, it's already platted. The road's already platted in the map, and so it makes it, obviously there's things like planned unit development that you can do to kind of maybe help mitigate that, but that's just a whole, you know, multi-year process to try to get that. And I think most people, if you talk to any developer, what they want is they need security during that process, right?
Mm-hmm.
No one wants to undertake a multi-year process of, you know, multi-million dollar project when there's such a uncertain future. And, you know, I think what I was really, I was kind of thinking this summer when seeing what was happening with housing prices, I was like, oh my gosh, I think we're going to like, I think like we kind of hit a boiling point where housing prices actually might stimulate more development, so that like the that process of the house actually being able to tip the scale in the development calculation to spur more development.
Is that realistic, given the fact that COVID has driven up construction costs? So that
no, and so that's the piece though, is that it, then you have construction costs that just during COVID, post COVID, you know, lumber prices in August were up 200% from their norm. I mean, it's back down to like 30%.
Yeah,
but there you're talking about, you know, 30, even at 30%, you're talking about $10,000 to $15,000 per house. So, and then double it with other supply chain issues. You know, because we're now starting to feel the effects of shutdowns from, you know, March and April with supplies to construction. You know, and lumber was kind of the first one to pop up, but you're seeing all these other things that are involved in the construction process are just rising because, you know, factories were shut down. And then put it on top of labor costs. You know, you had some people who still have not, a lot of these larger companies, a lot of employees still haven't come back, or they decided to change careers, or they took a different. So labor, which was already strained pre-COVID, is even more strained post-COVID. So I don't have an answer for development. I do, I mean, this is kind of a boring one, but I do think the city of Port Townsend requires steel pipes for water mains. I think they could go to PVC, which would lower the cost of development. But that's, you know, really it, because you still have to put all these utilities in. You still have to build a road. You know, there's not really too many corners that can be cut.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I don't know what the answer is.
Well, at this point. Lance, we need you to fix it. Whatever it is, we need you to fix it because we're waiting.
Yeah. You know, I would put a shout out to those people who have, you know, like maybe a house on a double lot that's on a developed road. I would really put it out there to really encourage people, like if they have that lot available, they should really think of building on it, right? You know, and because at this point,
yeah,
you know, if they have a lot that's readily available, you know, you can build, and you could build, you know, hire somebody to build it and sell it, and you know,
this is the biggest problem in Port Townsend, is that we have this density, right? The density exists, but it also, there is the climate of you know, wanting privacy and wanting a bigger lot, and I mean, the platting, the traditional platting really afforded people these large lots where they can have more privacy or they can have more yard to play in. But, and I'm not, you know, obviously people's property right is in our country to do with as they please, but like, you know, there's potential benefits all around to considering that extra lot as a way to add to density, you know, because more mm-hmm. density helps take the pressure off of our rental market, and it will make you some money down the line. And, you know, Joe may not, you know, walk you through the process, but you can, there's lots of different ways to do it. We need to do this again, because I think we're just getting started touching on things. I did have a question come in from a potential landlord, so I wanted to ask you this before we get off the air.
Okay.
What percentage of the mortgage do you charge to your tenants? Like, if they pay the mortgage, how much are you charging above that monthly? You know, what kind of rubric do you use for determining how much monthly rates are?
You know, I typically will use I use a website called Rentometer, and it does a market analysis for the bedrooms and bathrooms and the address that you put in, and it gives you
free?
The range. You can get a free one. It actually provides you a pretty good chunk of information for free. But then there's also like one where you can get a more detailed analysis for a fee. But it really, I use the free one. And it just shows you the range of like low, medium, and high for like, say, a 3-bedroom, 2-bath house in that neighborhood. And so I use that as the gauge. I look at what, you know, I have to look at what my goal of that property is. It's best to keep a tenant there. It works out in everyone's favor to keep a tenant in place. I very well might go on a much lower end, of that scale, to help try to keep somebody there. Cause again, if you're, goal is turnover of rent of tenants is like that's one of the biggest killers of profit as being a landlord is the turnover. So again, it's part of that working in their benefit to if a tenant wants to stay and stay there, provide them that slightly lower range that you know will help ensure that you know the next time a house down the street comes available, they don't move down there, right? Because again, even though maybe you're charging $200 less a month, the fact that if they leave, you know, it's going to take you at least a month, month and a half to get it ready, get it listed, or, you know, get it ready to go, and then counting like painting and doing all the fix-ups that come with normal wear and tear. So again, it works in your favor to provide a slightly lower rent to help keep a tenant in place, because again, it works for you and it's obviously good for them too.
That's rad. Joe, this has been great, and I hope that you'll consider coming back on to talk more about housing issues in the future and basically fixing the world with us here on Glendon Biofilter with Wild Rice.
All right. Through Primus?
Yeah. Primus will be next time, buddy.
All right. Well, it is in the genre of funk rock.
Yeah,
so that is
like
you know,
jazz.
You like
know,
jazz.
It's jazzy. It's jazzy bass. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks again, Joe.
All right.
Take care.
All right. Thanks, Paul.
Yep.
All right, bye.
Bye.